We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
All right, a Wednesday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Corey Anderson and Beards. We head up until 2 o'clock. We've got you for the next 4 hours. A lot of football on the docket, some college basketball as well. Mick Schaefer hanging out with us in the noon hour. Get an update to our ZOUs, the zone over-unders with the Chiefs as we have wrapped up the regular season. We'll see who owes lunch to the other three. We do that in the noon hour with Mick Schaefer, a little thrift store Price is Right as well. Cynthia Freeland will be our guest at 11 o'clock, our NFL Network analytics expert. She joins us every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. We'll talk with her about the playoffs, the matchups, the Chiefs heading into the postseason, how they're playing right now, confidence that may be there from her. And we'll also go through what she looks at and looks for in playoff teams to either make a prediction or give the probabilities of teams to advance and make it to the Super Bowl. Curious for her criteria, because we've done the playoff eliminator with a number of things over the last few years that I've looked at that have been some of the things that have been in common of Super Bowl winning and Super Bowl losing teams. So I want to do that today as well and then get Cynthia Freeland's thoughts as to what she does in those things. Matt Tate joins us later on this hour as KU gets the win last night against Iowa State, 62-61. K-State and Mizzou in action tonight. K-State 3.5-point favorites against TCU at home. And Missouri traveling to Arkansas, where they are a touchdown and a hook dogs tonight. That'll be on the SEC Network. Both those games at 8 o'clock, K-State on ESPNU. 913-912-4810 is the text line. 913-912-4810. Text line to be a part of the show today. We'll also hear from the Chiefs later on today as Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and we'll see who else would be at the podium as they get set for the postseason. A rematch against the Steelers that they just completely dominated and punked the Steelers right out of the gates. Lot of mixed feelings on this game, and I know it's because it's the playoffs, and you never take a team for granted because of any given Sunday, Saturday, Monday in the postseason. So there's an element, there's a feel of like, yes, they're the better team, maybe by a pretty good margin, but it's the postseason and you never know what's going to happen. I feel like we kind of do know what's going to happen. But if they lose, everybody will blame me. But I think it's going to be...
I don't think anybody will blame you.
Yeah, they will. It'll be my fault. But also, no matter what I say about the game, it doesn't matter.
Jason,
it will not impact the game.
They'll blame the refs. We already know that.
No,
if the Chiefs lose, it's not because the Chiefs lose. Oh, it's because the refs...
Sort of depends on what happens. I don't think the refs could make enough calls in this one to be the reason that the Chiefs would lose this game. No, I don't think they could.
Refs could make any team win if they legitimately were corrupt and legitimately needed to make a team win. They could make that happen in any
theory.
Game.
Yes, I guess they could. I just don't see that being the case.
I don't either.
No matter the conspiracy theories out there about the NFL and how that game came down to the final kick at the end of the game in overtime from a tie to Pittsburgh getting in, the Chargers losing and being knocked out, the Raiders going to the playoffs. That the drama that built up, like, oh, odd that it ended up just like that when people were talking about a tie all week long.
Rich Bisaccia got a text from several casino owners as he was running out the clock saying, you better kick this damn field goal because we're exposed to 700-1 odds on lots of bets. If this game ends in a tie.
That's exactly
right. So Bisaccia had to kick the field goal.
Makes total sense. Again, 913-912-4810. I do want to start off with college basketball. KU, as I said, getting the win last night against Iowa State, 62-61. DeJuan Harris with the drive and the bucket to ultimately win. The shot at the buzzer from Iowa State is off the mark, and KU walks away with a victory. Struggled in the first half at times, turn it on in the second half, and then down the stretch was a fun game of guys making plays, knocking down shots, Ochai hitting two free throws, he, you know, hitting some big shots himself, Iowa State hitting some big shots, an inch away from that game going into overtime, if it's a three and not a two from Iowa State, but the foot barely on the line gives them a one-point lead. And, of course, as we know what happens after that, the rest of the way, and KU gets the win. It's a big one for KU because just simply keeping pace and winning the games that you should win. And I know Iowa State, ranked team, good team, but just taking care of business matters. And that's the feel I had last night, was get the win no matter what, especially the way they were playing. And there's still the part that Bill Self is trying to still figure out what this team is going to be. Identity, you can call it. The rotational players. Remy Martin with the knee injury that kept him out. So that takes away a little bit of the rotation. KJ Adams starting both halves, but only playing 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch Lightfoot playing 21 minutes. McCormick only playing 10. Like they start the game with 6'7 and 6'8 in the front court against Iowa State that doesn't exactly have, Toshibwe or Coburn there. You know, it might be different. Maybe you go with McCormick out of necessity, that you just have to do that. You can't play the front court with Jalen Wilson and KJ Adams if you're going up against a dominant player like that. But an opportunity to do that. Is that another message to McCormick? Is it another message to maybe Mitch Lightfoot? Is it just simply seeing what he had in KJ Adams? Maybe KJ Adams had been busting his butt in practice and proving that he at least needed a look and an opportunity. Maybe it's Bill Self sending a message that this guy's working in practice. He's doing everything we ask him to do, and here's his reward is starting. And whether Bill Self cares about starters or not, and he's talked about that, oh, you guys care about starters. You know, I don't really care. There's a message. The players care about who's starting and who's not. That was a really interesting decision last night. I don't know how that impacts going forward, but the starting part was the bigger deal because he only played 10 minutes. If he started and played 25 or 30, I think it might be a different story. He started and played 10, so Bill Self puts him out there, but then doesn't stay with them in the rotation.
I think it's a message to both McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot that we need something from both of you guys. McCormick did not follow up what he had done at Oklahoma State when they went to Tech over the weekend. And so, it would seem logical that you could just kind of expect him to have gotten the message. And he clearly didn't get the message enough to where it carried over. And when you were gone and I was talking with Matt Tate, he mentioned that Bill Self had said, you know, in one of his press conferences earlier that KJ Adams might already be this team's best defender. He's just hasn't quite gotten there on the offensive end, but his energy and his defense is something that Bill Self does value a lot. And I just remember Matt Tate saying it because he said, you know, because Ochai is a really good defender. So it was surprising to hear Bill Self say that KJ Adams might already be the best defensive player on this team. And so you reward something like that. And like you said, it's not, maybe not, he's not ready to have a ton of minutes, but he likes the energy that he's going to give to these guys coming out of the gates and doesn't feel that he's getting that out of McCormick and Lightfoot. So put KJ Adams out there and see if he gives these guys a spark.
I think the hardest working guy out there was TJ Olzelberger for Iowa State. That guy's a madman on the sideline. Like, Tom Crean was somebody we always watched and had fun with because of his face that he always looked like he was smelling a fart, but he was walking up and down the sideline, adjusting his pants like he was Chris Farley in a motivational speaker and just oddly looking, but walking the whole time, not standing still. Olzelberger is a madman on the sideline. I loved watching it.
Got some intensity.
That guy is as hard of a worker as anybody. He might burn as many calories as the players in a game. He's never stopped.
Made me think, too, of Bruce Pearl, a guy who really gets into it.
True.
And, like, you know, just a dude. Mm-hmm. He's very intense.
Yep.
Which is so, like, you look just right down the row there, and Bill Self is just, like, so chill. And, like, he'll make some pissed off expressions, and then, like, right after the game ended, and he's just laughing.
Yeah.
Like, Bill Self's just got this, like, cool, calm demeanor. Olzelberger, not that guy.
Yeah. No, not at all. And that look from Bill Self was interesting, too, because it was like, we survived, but also, what a game.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like, you know he loves doing what he does. Mm-hmm. You know that already, because you can't be that successful and that consistent if you don't truly have a passion for it and love it, especially at that level. But then to have the smile. Yes, you won, but just like, wow, that was fun. That was, hey, we won. Who knows? Could have gone either way. Great game, guys, but that was fun.
I love finishes like that where coaches don't get so involved and they trust their players to go out and just make plays. And you just expect there to be, okay, timeout, okay, timeout. Yeah. And it just may endings like that, they're just so rare in basketball because you just don't have coaches that will trust the guys to just do it without calling those timeouts. So it's just incredible to see that kind of ending.
But that's interesting, though, because one of the conversations that came from the game last night was Otzelberger not calling a timeout there when DeJuan Harris scored. The reason I don't think he called a timeout, and maybe he calls a timeout if they get it across half court and he doesn't see anything developing, but they got it across half court and it felt like they had the advantage because KU was caught looking and Iowa State, well coached, immediately takes the ball out, gets it up floor, and, you know, outlet pass, and the point guard's up there leading the way. And when you call a timeout to set up a play, ultimately what you want is a good shot. That's it. Just, can we take a good shot? If it goes in, it goes in. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Make or miss game. But we at least want to set up to give ourselves a chance. I thought they got a pretty good shot.
I did, too.
On that possession there.
DeJuan Harris had fallen down on his shot attempt, so you've got one of their guys that's getting up and playing from, you know, trying to catch up position because he fell down on his layup attempt and they got it in quickly. So, yeah, you got kind of that frantic nature of the defense as opposed to the defense being able to be completely set.
Yep.
I like not calling a timeout there as long as you trust your guys, like you said, to get a good shot. I thought they got one.
Yeah, I mean, if they throw, you know, inbound the ball, and you don't feel like there's a sense of urgency to get up the floor, or you get across half court and KU set up, and you're like, all right, we need to call timeout, because we need to set something up here. We're not just going to let it free flow when KU's as good of a defensive team as they are, and they've got guys set and in place, and the floor is balanced defensively. We're not going to do that.
He's got that 2 or 3 seconds as they're getting to half court to be like, okay, we've got the advantage here. I'm not going to stop it with a timeout.
Let's see what happens here. And if it goes in, it goes in. I thought they got a good shot. It just didn't fall. Things like that happen. But Iowa State
and
certainly
McCormick
showed themselves
worthy.
McCormick
didn't have to goaltend that one either.
That's true.
He didn't have to slap that one after it was on its way to the bucket off the backboard.
That happens.
Yeah. Iowa State fans today blaming the refs. So, probably. That's what fans do.
I mean, it was not a pass interference. I mean, we know that. It was a BS call.
It was a goaltending that they missed.
But it was not pass interference.
It was not.
We know that for sure. But Iowa State showed themselves to be legit. I mean, they're not a Final Four team, but from a year ago to now, I mean, obviously they are very different and a team that is capable of winning against Texas Tech at home and going to KU and getting a win, because Texas Tech has shown themselves that they are in position and a legitimate contender to win the Big 12.
Hell yeah, they are. They without their best player.
Yeah.
They've now beaten KU at home and on the road at Baylor in back-to-back games, and T.J. Shannon hasn't played in either game.
Yeah, 4 days they beat KU and Baylor, the two teams that are expected to compete or win the Big 12.
Baylor hasn't lost since the Big 12 tournament last year. They were 15-0 this year and obviously 6-0 in the tournament. They had won 21 straight games. That was the longest win streak in the nation.
I need to find the stat that I had with Myron last week. So Baylor, since November 8th, 2019.
So that was before COVID canceled the tournament.
Yep, November 8th, 2019, they have 5 total losses heading into that Tech game last night. They have lost 5 games since November 8, 2019. And they lose last night on their home floor. Had a decent lead in the first half, but credit Texas Tech, one of the better defensive teams in the country. And Chris Beard goes to Texas. Seems like Tech is continuing on with their team.
Don't count out Mark Adams.
No.
We all know Mark Adams. Like, Mark Adams.
Isn't he the head of officiating with the NCAA?
No, he's Texas Tech's head coach. And then he looked exactly like you would expect the guy Mark Adams that you know nothing about to look like. I'll be honest, last night was the first time I saw Mark Adams in person, and I was like, yep, okay, that's Mark Adams.
There's a Mark Adams guy. But 19th-ranked Texas Tech upsets number one, unanimous number one in the AP poll, an undefeated Baylor 65-62 in Waco. Tech now 2-1 in the Big 12, wins over KU and Baylor, and their only loss was by 4. I think it was only a 4-point loss in Ames.
Yeah, it was.
To Iowa State.
61-57, I think.
Yeah,
was the
something
final.
Like that. I think it was actually or like 51-47.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
that was a game where it was like
nobody
2008 could score. Yeah. Big East basketball.
Yeah.
It was like just throwing a brick at the basket. It's like, is that one of those extra large basketballs that they use for training in practice that they're throwing at the rim that doesn't really go in?
Well, yeah, and that's four of the five best teams in the Big 12 playing last night, and the highest yeah. score was 65 amongst those teams.
It's the unfortunate part about what the NCAA has allowed to happen over the last couple of years, which is the loss of freedom of movement. They went through all that trouble of calling all those fouls when everybody was like, oh, it's going to be a free throw-a-thon because you can't even touch them. Yeah, it's called freedom of movement. It's called making the game a better product. And it is slowly eroded. And now we're seeing, you know, wrestling matches and guys pulling and tugging, and it's not being called. It's like you went through all that trouble to establish freedom of movement for everybody to adjust and coach that way. And now it's back to where it was before that. And now we're seeing 50 points in the 50s, a lot of games in typically the low 60s. It's unfortunate because I really loved the game when there was the freedom of movement established, that you saw more offensive game. It was more of a true game and not the pulling and pushing and tugging. Again, like the wrestling matches of the Big East in the 2000s, which, you know, were not all that fun games, all that much of a fun game to watch. The Big 12 basketball update is presented by Grin Eye Care in Olathe and Leawood, meeting all your LASIK and refractive surgery needs. Find them at grineyecare.com. Tonight, winless teams in the league, TCU in Manhattan faces off K-State. Wildcats, 3.5-point favorites over the Horned Frogs. Tip coming up at 8 o'clock on ESPNU.
There will only be one winless team in the Big 12.
Right.
After
it's the,
tonight.
It's the Highlander. There can only be one.
Is it 0-1 TCU or 0-3 K-State that gets the win?
0-1. TCU loses.
Okay.
K-State gets the win tonight. And not a Big 12 update, but Mizzou at Arkansas, 8 o'clock in the SEC Network. 913-912-4810. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk some Chiefs on the other side. I want to get into the playoff eliminator. We've done this the last couple of years. And I want to look at the teams that are remaining. When we go through and see the Super Bowl winners and the Super Bowl participants, what did they do in the regular season? How does that match up historically? And who are the teams remaining this year in the playoffs that fit the criteria of teams that win their conference? We do that next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
And that's why I think this is a really big deal for Eli Drinkwitz. Is Corey there? Did he drop? Is he gone? That's what I thought.
He literally dropped.
He's
I looked over and he's gone that moment.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Now, we don't need to hear from you.
It is a big deal, though.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yes.
You know I'm...
All right. Well, there's Corey. All right. We'll talk with Matt Tate coming up later on this hour. We've got Cynthia Freeland at 11 o'clock, NFL Network analytics expert Mick Schaefer, Thrift Store Price is Right, ZOUs, where we... see who won, who lost, who owes lunch, who gets to enjoy lunch on somebody else. Main Street countdown in the 1 o'clock hour. Chiefs as well. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and we'll see who else at the podium today. So I wanted to go through the playoff eliminator to see which teams of the 14 have the best chance to make the Super Bowl based on historical precedent of rankings on a few stats, few categories in rankings. So looked at defense and offense. So defense, it is defensive scoring. So scoring defense, not necessarily total defense, because if you look at total defense, it's all over the board with Super Bowl winners and Super Bowl losers, just teams that won their conference. But scoring defense, there has been six straight winners in the top 10 of scoring defense in the league. And 13 of 16 teams in the last 8 years for both conferences. So last 8 years, 16 teams, 13 of the 16 have been in the top 10. So top 10 scoring defense matters. All right, we see that. On offense, offensive scoring matters because the last 8 winners of the Super Bowl, 7 have been ranked in the top 10 in offensive scoring. 5 straight have been in the top 5. So scoring offense you need to be in the top five. And six of seven have been in the top five in scoring offense. And in the last 5 years, both winners and losers of the Super Bowl, so 10 teams, nine of the 10 have been in the top five scoring offense. And total offense, just yards, in the last 5 years, 10 teams, all 10 have been in the top 10. So top five scoring, top 10 overall, top 10 scoring defense, and I also did point differential. So point differential, last 12 years. So I went back 12 years because a couple of years ago we started it and we did 10 years from then. So I just added two more, you know, over the last couple of years. So 12 years, point differential, the winners, nine of the 12 years have been in the top three of their conference. So you better be in the top three in point differential of your conference to win your conference. And 20 of the 24 teams in the last 12 playoffs have been in the top three scoring or point differential in their conference. If you are not in the top three, you are not going to the Super Bowl. That is 20 of 24 teams have been ranked in the top three of point differential in their conference to go to the Super Bowl. So that's the criteria.
Okay.
So we go through and start to eliminate teams. So point differential, top three in the AFC, the top three in the AFC, Buffalo, New England, Kansas City. Defensive or scoring defense, you got to be in the top 10. There are four teams in the AFC, in the AFC playoffs that are in the top 10. Buffalo, New England, Kansas City, Tennessee. Scoring offense, you need to be in the top 10, seven of the last eight. That's KC, Buffalo, Cincinnati, and New England. But as we said, top five is really where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be in the top five scoring offense. Two teams in the AFC that are ranked in the top five of the overall league, not just in their conference.
Mm-hmm.
Point differential is the only one we did conference. Everything else is the entire league. Two teams in the AFC playoffs that are in the top five scoring offense, Kansas City and Buffalo. Total offense of the entire league, you need to be ranked in the top 10 of total offense. There are four teams in the AFC ranked in the top 10 of total offense. Buffalo, Cincinnati, Kansas City, New England. Two teams fit every single criteria there that we've looked at the last 3 years of teams that have gone on to play in the Super Bowl. The last 3 years, the playoff eliminators have pointed out Chiefs, San Francisco, and then Tampa and the Chiefs last year were part of the teams that were still remaining.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done it last 2 years. NFC, point differential, Tampa Bay, Dallas, Rams. Scoring offense, Tampa Bay, Dallas. Or scoring defense, sorry. Scoring offense, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, Dallas, L.A. Total offense, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, Dallas, L.A., Arizona, San Francisco. Two teams match every single criteria
Bucks
there.
Bucks and Cowboys.
Bucks and Cowboys, Chiefs and Bills are the four teams that hit every single category that we've done the last 2 years that has picked out of the teams that we've eliminated that have been left, have gone on to win their conference. The really interesting part of that is, if it holds to seed, those are the matchups in the divisional round. Tampa Bay and Dallas. Dallas would head to Tampa Bay, and Buffalo would head to Kansas City in the divisional round. You could make a case that next week's divisional round could have a matchup in each conference of who makes the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that the winners of those,
the winners
two,
of
games,
those two games
are the ones that will go to the Super Bowl.
Which, in the AFC, that wouldn't be a surprise, right?
If
KC or Buffalo. In fact, FPI has Chiefs and Buffalo as the two highest-ranked teams' probability of winning the Super Bowl mm-hmm. in the conference.
Behind the Packers and Bucks.
Behind the Packers. Packers and Bucks were the top two in FPI projections.
But then Chiefs
and then Chiefs
and Bills.
And Bills, and then Titans.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Chiefs and Bills. And in the NFC, the one that's surprising there is Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
that they, you know, across the board, they come in each and every one of those in the top three in scoring, top five in top 10 in scoring defense, top five in scoring offense, top 10 in overall offense.
And they're the smallest favorite this weekend out of all the games.
Yeah.
Cowboys are only a field goal favorite over the Niners.
Yeah, I'll take that. If it's Chiefs-Cowboys, I wouldn't be surprised based on what we've done in the exercise the last couple of years. If it's Chiefs-Bucks, if it's Buffalo, Dallas, if it's Buffalo-Tampa Bay, I'd say the most likely is Chiefs or Bills v. Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't take into account injuries.
Injuries, yep. Tampa Bay and built up a lot of those stats while they had Chris Godwin, while they had Leonard Fournette, while they had
Jumping Jacks, Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Shaq Barrett, you know, is battling injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't take into account those things.
So interesting that you, when you were listing all those off, New England hit everyone but one.
But the scoring offense in the top five.
Yeah.
New England is ranked, okay, scoring offense, top five. New England comes in at number six.
So they are one spot out of hitting all of them.
So you can make a case that Chiefs, Bills, New England.
Yeah, and
would
Bills,
be the three.
Patriots is the round one game.
Right.
So the winner of that game then coming in to potentially play the Chiefs, assuming that, well, I guess not New England. New England wouldn't play the Chiefs. New England would go play Tennessee.
Yeah, the Chiefs can't play the sixth seed.
Yep.
The we talk about a path for different teams. Buffalo's path could be home to New England, and then at Kansas City, the two other teams that match the criteria. New England, as you said, literally one spot away from being in every single category with the Chiefs and the Bills, and that is being in the top five scoring offense.
And it's supposed to be 0 degrees Saturday night.
Yeah.
Bills and Patriots. Mm-hmm. You think about the crazy weather game they had a few weeks back. It's not supposed to be windy and snowy like that necessarily, but it's going to be 0 degrees for the high that night while those two teams are playing in Buffalo. So stranger things could happen, and I can't even believe I'm saying it, but I'm rooting like hell for the Patriots to win that game.
Texas, going chalk for the whole tournament always works. But I'm just talking about if it goes to seeds, that would be the divisional round matchup of Tampa Bay, Dallas, Chiefs, and Buffalo. But if you're talking about going to the Super Bowl, it could be a 3 versus 3. It'd be Buffalo and Dallas are the 3 seeds in their conference. I mean, if Buffalo...
Or Chiefs, Bucks again, which would be the 2 seeds.
Which would be the 2 seeds, yeah. Neither of those teams getting a bye.
It's just interesting that neither of the number 1 seeds qualify
and where,
in that eliminator thing. And it's the 2s and 3s in both conferences.
Where Green Bay comes up short is in point differential. Green Bay is 5th. So they're out of the top 3 in point differential, and they're only at 79 points. Like, the Chiefs are 3rd in the AFC with a plus 116. Green Bay is at plus 79. So they fall short in point differential. They fall short in scoring defense. Green Bay is 14th. They need to be in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
They fall short in scoring offense, oddly enough. They need to be in the top 5. Scoring offense, Green Bay is 10th. In the league.
Yeah, so they fall short in several categories.
3 categories.
Of these that have been key indicators of teams that get to the Super Bowl. So we're not trying to say that this isn't predicting what we think might happen or won't happen. It's just this is what Super Bowl teams have been, and these are the teams that hit all those benchmarks. And right now it's just the 2 seed and the 3 seed in both conferences that hit those marks. Both number 1 seeds miss the mark.
Tennessee misses the mark in 1, 2, 3, 4 of the 5 categories.
Yeah, scoring defense was the only thing they were top 10 in, right?
Yep, scoring defense, top 10. They are point differential. Tennessee is 6th in the conference at plus 65. Again, top 3 is where you need to be. In, scoring offense, you need to be in the top 5. Scoring offense, they are 15th this year in the league. So they are middle of the pack. And then total offense, you need to be in the top 10. Total offense, they are 17th.
So go out there and put your money on Chiefs and Bills and Cowboys and Buccaneers each to make the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Good chance. One, if not both conferences, you'll have one of them right.
Yep.
And you'll get good enough odds on that to cover. So there you go. We're making you money.
It's been 2 for 2, and that's it. So we might have gotten lucky the last 2 years. And there might be others like DVOA, FPI, things like that, might be better indicators of like, no, the Super Bowl winner is specifically this, 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 and this. We've just gone back the last 12 years, and there are certain stats that we've seen. And these are your generic stats that we've looked at for years and years and years. These are not the advanced analytics that are there. Again, those things, which is one of the reasons why I want to ask Cynthia Freeland, like, how do you look at these things? I'll give her these, you know, numbers and how, you know, we came down with those, but could be totally off. And she could go, yeah, it's just been lucky the last couple of years that the teams that have been eliminated and have been left happen to fit in those criteria. But that's not what we would want to use moving forward. We'll see. We'll take a timeout. We'll go ahead.
Real quick, Travis Kelce is going to be the one after Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid today. So those are the three we'll hear from in the 1 o'clock hour.
Absolutely. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Matt Tate comes up next.
You're in the Zone with Jason Anderson.
He's a good guy to hang out with. He's a good guy to work with. He's a good guy to confide in. He's got the characteristics of what you would hope that your best friend or a brother would have. And he's tough.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we'll talk with Cynthia Freeland coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. KU getting the win last night against Iowa State. We bring in Matt Tate to the show. Lawrence Turner World, KUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery when we talk with Matt Tate. Matt, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I am doing just fine. You know what? Taking care of business. That's what last night was, a good Iowa State team, and they found a way to win. DeJuan Harris with a big shot. What was your takeaway from that win?
Well, they needed it. I mean, It was a good game and a good team that they played. And you know, crazy to me that Iowa State's 1-3 all of a sudden in conference because they're really close to being 4-0. Even though they're kind of behind it right now, I think they'll still factor in a big way. That's a good team, and they play so hard, and they make you fight for every inch you got. And so because the score ended up in a favorable way for Kansas, I think they can – leave that game thinking that was a pretty damn good win. We feel good about this, but if that shot doesn't go in, or more importantly, the one Iowa State got off at the end does go in, then you have a whole laundry list of things that you're frustrated about and concerned about, and I think those are still there. They don't go away, but it was. I think this team needed to win a street fight like that, and just for their confidence and just for their their knowledge that they can do it, and that builds your confidence, and that can take you farther in games where you run into that again, because they're going to. I mean, this league is not going to give you any breaks. Mm-mm. You're not going to have any easy games. I saw a bunch of people on Twitter and stuff, KU fans, that is, complaining about, I'm sick of it being close against Iowa State at home. Well, you know what? Iowa State's a good program, and they're maybe better than they've been in a long time right now. So no shame in that victory by any means. And, there's still plenty they need to work on and get figured out. But I thought Self's comment about right now we just got to piece it together until we figure out how we're going to play. You don't hear that every January with him. And that right there tells you exactly where they're at and exactly what they're doing. And they got to figure it out sooner than later, because it's going to be February before we know it, and then you're running out of time then.
Look, it's a make or miss game is one thing I always talk about with college basketball, and KU made a shot at the end. Iowa State missed theirs, and good on DeJuan Harris. I thought it was a good shot that Iowa State got off. I'm not on board with the, Iowa State should have called a timeout. I thought once they inbounded the ball and had an advantage, I thought Otzelberger calling a timeout would be a coach stepping in where maybe it didn't need to be stepped in or him stepping in, because as soon as the outlet pass got that quick down the court, they got a good shot off. A good shooter got a good shot off. And ultimately, if you call a timeout and get your guys over there, your plan is to get a good shot. That's it. You're not going to get a layup against a Bill Self team, right? You're not going to fool them. You're not going to be elementary school. Everybody goes down to the KU side, and all of KU's team is down there, and you're like, oh, we've got one guy down here. Gotcha. We're going to score the bucket. Like, that's not going to happen. So you're going to have to work in the little amount of time that you have instead of you got a 3-on-2, sort of a 3-on-3 with a trailer, and you got a good shot. I'll take that, and I think Otzelberger will take that every single time when the clock is running down the way that it is. Ultimately, DeJuan Harris hit a big shot at a big moment, and Iowa State got a shot off, and they missed theirs. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot to complain about if you're Iowa State, and I'm not saying they are, but if you're Otzelberger, I'm not walking away going, boy, I feel awful about my team. I'm walking away going, man, we've had opportunities, but it's a matter of learning how to win. The first step is showing that you can do that, because last year they were just getting beat down. Show that you can do that, and then find ways to win. They did it against Texas Tech at home. Find ways to get some of those other wins.
Yeah, you want to see what adrenaline looks like in real life? That's it right there. That shot that the guy missed right in front of the Iowa State bench, that's long because of the situation. He is trying to beat the clock. He is juiced. Mm-hmm. He is ready to be a hero.
That's a good point.
And he just, I mean, you know, because the guy was a dead-on shooter all night. And when he got any space, he knocked him down. And that moment, just that kind of crazy frenzy that it was, I think that's what forced it to be long. So, but you're right, and Self said the same thing. I mean, you're not going to see very many college basketball games where, over however many seconds it was, 36 seconds or something, you get three possessions like that without a timeout on either side. And Self said it too when KU came back with 16 seconds left, down one, just, you know, as quickly as they went up one before that. He said 9 times out of 10, I'm calling timeout there. But he said, you know, open floor.
Yes,
I had the ball already. We call timeout. We're still going to want to get it to Ochai. And, oh, by the way, Iowa State will go zone or do something that will make us have to think and make it harder. And so I didn't call a timeout and just let my guys play. And you know, credit to Ochai. He doesn't hit the game-winning shot, but he did get to the free throw line before that when they were down one and showed that he wants the ball in that moment. And then down one again with 15.7 seconds left, he's the guy with the ball in his hands again. He makes the right play, obviously gets it to DeJuan. He really didn't have much choice because DeJuan's man helped off and kind of doubled him. Mm-hmm. But still, your guy who's playing at an All-American level, who's your senior leader, who's a veteran, who's the guy you you know want taking as many of those shots as you can, you want him to have the ball in his hands in those moments, and Ochai showed he wanted to do that. That was a big step for him just because over his career he's been a solid role player, never really been in that moment, and it's very clear now that if they need a shot, he wants to take it. That's a big thing that could pay off down the road, too.
Yeah, and maybe for DeJuan Harris, too, knocking down the shot, because I feel like if he misses that, the takeaway would be, you know, Jalen Wilson was wide open under the bucket. Why didn't you just toss it to him when you were driving? And yeah, you made it a little more difficult, but he made it.
Yeah.
So that's all that matters. What's your takeaway with KJ Adams starting both halves, but only playing 10 minutes? Is that, you know, a message that Bill Self is sending to other guys? Is it KJ Adams is busting his butt in practice, so it's a reward, even though Bill Self says starters don't matter? What do you make of KJ Adams starting and playing 10 minutes?
I think it was definitely a reward. I mean, I think number one, he's been so good when he's gotten into the games that I think they wanted to see what it would look like. And he was good early too. I mean, his energy was good. His activity level was good. I mean, you know, nobody expected him to go in there and become, you know, the clear cut starter the rest of the way or anything like that. But I think they wanted to see that early energy and see somebody who's active. And, you know, he got a dunk early and he got a couple of rebounds and his hands were on deflecting passes and things like that. So I thought he played well with the minutes he was given. But the takeaway is definitely just the clear sign that is that they have not figured it out yet. And you know, that's really kind of on everybody. It's not any one person's fault. I guess if you wanted to put the blame on one person, it would probably be on David McCormick. Because if he were playing at the level they expect him to play at, you wouldn't even have a question then. But you know, he's working through his own issues and they've tried Mitch Lightfoot there and you know, he's had sort of a mixed bag of results there. So you know, Self said on Monday that this matchup would be a good opportunity for KU to maybe look to go a little small and maybe play Jalen Wilson more at the five or obviously KJ Adams. And so I think it was largely matchup dependent because they thought they could do that and try that against Iowa State. But again, when you look out at the rest of the box score, Mitch Lightfoot played 20 minutes, and David McCormick was out there in the final 5 minutes for a bunch of minutes, it seemed like, even after he hadn't played almost the entire game. So, you know, there's a lot of internal struggle still going on right now trying to figure out exactly who they are, what they're going to do with that five spot, what they want to do with that five spot, and how it's going to work. And until they figure that out, you know, it's going to continue to be things like this where, like he said, they're just trying to piece it together. And you know, I think that I think KJ Adams has a role, though. I think I don't think that this is – I don't know that he'll start again, but I do think that him showing that he can be effective in a big moment like that against a ranked team and you know, knowing he has the trust of his coaches and stuff, I think that's big for him just as a rotation guy. Now he's got that confidence in his bag, and he can kind of believe in himself a little bit more when he gets to play, and maybe that will make him more effective too. But at this point, you know, it comes down to getting Remy healthy, and it comes down to can David McCormick figure it out?
Yeah, 15.
Because if those two things happen, then Mitch goes back to the bench and is your seventh man where he probably is best, and Jalen Wilson is your sixth man where he's probably pretty good, and all of a sudden, 1 through 7, you're as good as anybody almost, and things are solid and steady, and you understand roles and all that, and then anything after that's gravy. But until those two things happen, this is going to be a team that is definitely scrambling and just trying to survive probably night in, night out. I mean, I don't see any reason to think that Saturday against West Virginia is going to be any kind of cakewalk either.
Well, the Big 12 is number one by a wide margin in KenPom's rankings from a conference standpoint, and it is. I mean, they're at an 18 efficiency level. The next closest is 15. I mean, 3 points is a pretty stark margin. Sure. From 1 to 2. So it's showing that it's the toughest conference so far. And by the way, 7 of the 10 teams are in the top 40 in KenPom rankings, 4 in the top 15 in the Big 12. And look, there's still 5 games left in January before it hits February 1st. And it's an arbitrary cutoff is, okay, now you're in February. But you start to look at it, you got some time to figure it out. But, you know, 4 conference games in Kentucky at the end of the month, at that point, you're like, okay, you're starting to run out of runway. You get only a limited amount of time before you got to figure that out and get it rolling. Last one for you. The atmosphere there last night, I know that masks were required, and it certainly seemed like everybody did their part and even complimented after the game as well. But Roy being there, Roy being back since leaving, I think for the most part that most of the hard feelings have probably softened in winning a national championship since then, and Bill Self being as good as he has been helps as well. What was the atmosphere like for you and Roy being in the building?
Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, you said it very well there on all those fronts. I mean, he needed it. The fans probably needed it. College basketball needed it. There's no room or time for bitterness or hatred after all these years. And so it was cool to see him honored that way. It was cool that it was pretty subtle. It was during a timeout. It wasn't like a big pregame ceremony where they made a to-do about it or anything like that. And that's what he would prefer. I know that. So very neat that he was able to get back and experience that. And I mean, we talked to him a little bit at halftime, and the coolest thing that he pointed out by far was that, you know, pregame, I was sitting a few seats down from him, and he just didn't sit. You know, the entire pregame, he kind of stood there at his seat with his arms folded and was just taking it all in. And that was really cool to watch and see that up close. But he said when we talked to him at halftime that, you know, that's the first time I've ever seen the Rock Chalk chant done, because normally he's been in the locker room, you know. So little things like that you don't realize. In fact, I had to change my story. I mean, I was writing it kind of ahead of time, and, you know, as that moment was unfolding, I was writing that, you know, sights and sounds that were familiar to him, he was taking them all in. And then he said that, and I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that wouldn't have been familiar to him. So I had to kind of tweak that. But it was really cool, and he got a terrific ovation. I mean, everybody came to their feet. The video board was a nice tribute. I mean, it was a nice reminder of just how cool college basketball is and how cool it's been at Kansas for a number of years, because you nailed it. I mean, the fact that they've had now, you know, 34 years of Roy Williams and Bill Self leading that program, there's a lot of programs that have had, you know, double-digit coaches in 34 years that would kill to have either one of those guys. And so cool that they were happy to have him back. Cool that he was wanting to come back and be a part of that. It was really cool watching him walk in, Jason, because, you know, he just had knee replacement surgery. I think he said 38 days ago. So he had a cane, which kind of caught some people off guard because he's not that old. You know, he doesn't need to use a cane, but it was because of that surgery. So he's walking in, and he had a little help getting to his seat, but it was kind of like a mob that moved, almost like an amoeba. It was just like this whole thing, and it was like the Beatles walked in. I mean, this was a big time celebrity being ushered to his seat, and he is a big time celebrity. He's a legend. He's one of the greatest to ever do it in college basketball history. Obviously, at Kansas too, and And it was a very cool moment. You know, you've heard Self talk about how he hopes this isn't the last time he comes through. I don't think it will be. I don't know if he'll do it annually or anything like that, but he saw a bunch of former players before the game, and you know, that's what Roy's all about. I mean, those relationships, those players, those kids that he made such an impact on, having these types of moments with them all these years later, that's what the guy lives for. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's, you know, able and willing to come back more in the future, just because even if it's only two or three guys that he gets to see, it means the world to him. And I think every time he comes back, fans will absolutely shower him with the love they showed him last night. I did not hear one single boo, and that's good because there's no time for that. I did hear a boo for Tristan and Aruna, which made no sense either. But you know, neither here nor there. But the Roy thing was super memorable, and I'm sure everybody that was there, and obviously Roy himself, they'll remember that one for a long time.
Matt Tate, Lawrence from the World, KUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery. Two coaches in 34 years, Mizzou, three coaches in 8 years. Whatever. I mean, sort of the same thing, if you ask me.
Yeah.
KU getting ready for a matchup this weekend and on Tuesday against Oklahoma, which is the next time we'll talk to you after they take on OU. So, we'll do that coming up next week.
Lots to talk about by then.
Yeah,
right?
No doubt. No doubt about that.
It changes or nothing changing at all. We'll find out, but it's definitely worth tracking. It's going to be a wild run.
Yeah. KJ Adams in his third start played all 40 minutes. Matt, you're the man. Appreciate it, sir.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Have a good rest of the week.
You do the same. All right, there's Matt Tate, Lawrence on the Road, KUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery, West Virginia Saturday, a home date. And then 2-0-U. On Tuesday, before setting up next Saturday, or a week from Saturday, because technically the next Saturday is this Saturday, K-State and KU. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. We'll talk with her about the playoffs, the Chiefs' draw with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Does she think that there is an overconfidence, a taking too lightly of the Pittsburgh Steelers, how the Chiefs are playing heading into the postseason, teams that are there, matchup problems, things like that? We will talk with Cynthia Freeland about the NFL coming up next.